got a sprain or an itch. Pain that's swelling or twitch. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me. Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Several days ago, I read an article titled FBI Investigates After Hundreds of Vaccine Doses Intentionally Ruined. It appears that a healthcare company stated that 57 vials of Moderna coronavirus vaccine were ruined and had to be discarded after a hospital employee intentionally removed the vials from a refrigerator.
The incident occurred at Aurora Hospital in a suburb of Milwaukee. The police were then notified of the employee tampering with vials of COVID-19 vaccine.
According to Advocate Aurora Health, they were led to believe initially that the vials, each containing 10 doses, were removed from the refrigerator in error. But later in the week, the employee acknowledged that they intentionally removed the vaccine from refrigeration.
The employee, who was a pharmacist working for Aurora Health, is no longer employed with the company. And although it seems that just 57 vials is a minor amount, these vials contain enough vaccine for 570 people.
Just 4 days later, I read another article which stated that the pharmacist, Stephen Brandenburg, said during the investigation that he thought the vaccine was capable of altering its recipient's DNA and admitted that this was an intentional act.
There is more to this story, as Brandenburg's wife alleged that her husband is an admitted conspiracy theorist, and actually her rental units where he was storing bulk food and guns.
Interestingly, she also stated that they had previously dropped off a water purifier, a large bucket of powdered milk, and 2 30-day emergency food buckets for her and their children. And she later stated that her husband believes that the government is planning cyber attacks with plans to shut down the power grid.
If this article scares you, just remember what we said on last two radio shows. The vaccines from both Pfizer and Moderna have no capability of changing the DNA of the vaccine's recipients.
There have also been several news reports from around the world of persons in general, good health, dying within days of receiving the vaccine. Now, one of the problems with this kind of information is that it will have to be linking the vaccine with the deaths.
For example, earlier in the week, there was the report that the number of those who got COVID-19 despite being vaccinated was at around 240 people.
I'm sure that over time there'll be more cases of side effects and mortality after someone receives the COVID-19 vaccine. The trick will be to see if these are real or just red herrings. Let me divert for just one moment in case you never heard the term red herring. It was used quite a lot in my youth. A red herring is anything that misleads or distracts from a relevant or important question. Could be any fallacy, even a device, that leads people towards a false conclusion. I remember when I was an intern at Washington Hospital Center in Washington, D.C., a gastroenterologist said to be very careful when looking at ulcers in the stomach of a patient with a gastroscope, because cancers often hide very close to the ulcers and often obscure them, giving the physician a false sense of the true diagnosis.
But getting back to the vaccines, even though neither the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine or the Moderna vaccine contains the coronavirus and cannot infect the recipient, time is needed for the genetic code in the drug to train the immune system to recognize and attack the disease.
The course of the U.S.-made vaccine requires 2 shots. According to the studies, immunity to COVID-19 increases only 8 to 10 days after the first injection and eventually reaches 50%. The second jab is administered 3 weeks later, 21 days from the first one, with a declared immunity of 95%, which is achieved only after a week past that second jab. And of course, there's still a 5% chance of getting infected even if the vaccine is at full potential.
Israel is currently undertaking a massive vaccination campaign which already saw over 1 million people, or almost 12% of the population, getting the Pfizer-BioNTech injection.
Now that's the largest span per capita in the world, according to Oxford University. The first phase of the program aims to immunize medics and elderly people before expanding onto other categories, just like we have here in Duval County and around Florida. Around 1 in 1,000 people have reported mild side effects after the injection, including weakness, dizziness, and fever, as well as pain, swelling, and redness at the spot where the shot was given. And so far, only a few dozen of them required medical attention, according to the Israeli Health Ministry.
So, now we need to answer several of the questions that you and others may have concerning the vaccines.
Now, I'm sorry if we're repeating some from both this and previous shows, but it's necessary that everyone knows the truth about these vaccines as we know them today. The first question involves whether or not a person getting a COVID-19 vaccine will test positive for COVID-19 on a viral test.
The answer, according to the CDC, is a resounding no. Neither the recently authorized and recommended vaccines nor the other COVID-19 vaccines currently in clinical trials in the United States can cause you to test positive on viral tests, which are used to see if you have a current infection.
But remember that I said viral test. Now, those are the tests where the actual virus itself is tested for. There are also antibody tests, which test whether or not your body has built up antibodies to the virus. So the answer is that if your body develops an immune response, which is the goal of vaccination, there is a possibility you could test positive on some antibody tests.
Antibody tests indicate you had a previous infection and that you may have some level of protection against the virus. Experts are currently looking at how COVID-19 vaccination may affect antibody testing results.
You may be asking, if you have already had COVID-19 and recovered, do you still need to get vaccinated with a COVID-19 vaccine?
The answer is yes. Remember that President Trump was infected with the coronavirus, yet he has been offered to have the vaccine.
Now, the reason that the answer to this is yes is due to the severe health risks associated with COVID-19. And the fact that reinfection with COVID-19 is still possible. That's why the vaccine should be offered to those who have been infected with the virus. Again, regardless of whether you already had COVID-19 infection.
And in fact, the CDC is providing recommendations to federal, state, and local governments about who should be vaccinated first.
At this time, experts do not know how long someone is protected from getting sick again after recovering from COVID-19. The immunity someone gains from having an infection, which is called natural immunity, well, it varies from person to person. Some early evidence does suggest natural immunity may not last very long, unfortunately.
And we won't know how long immunity produced by vaccination lasts until we have more data on just how well the vaccination works. Both natural immunity and vaccine-induced immunity are important aspects of COVID-19 that experts are trying to learn more about.
Next question. Will a COVID-19 vaccine protect us from getting sick with COVID-19? Now, here again, the answer is yes. COVID-19 vaccination works by teaching your immune system how to recognize and fight the virus that causes COVID-19. It is the fact that your body will then recognize the virus as an enemy and will then protect you from getting sick with COVID-19.
There is really no way yet to predict how COVID-19 infection could affect you, even if you don't have an increased risk of developing severe complications.
The next question, and I was waiting for this question, is the most asked question right now. And we've actually answered it several times, but it's worth it to answer just one more time. Will a COVID-19 vaccine alter your DNA? No. COVID-19 mRNA vaccines do not change or interact with your DNA in any way. And both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines are this type of vaccination.
Both vaccines presently being used here in the U.S. are called messenger RNA vaccines, also called mRNA vaccines.
mRNA vaccines teach ourselves how to make a protein that triggers your immune response. The reason that this cannot cause the infection is that the mRNA from a COVID-19 vaccine never enters the nucleus of the cell, which is where our DNA is kept. This means that the mRNA cannot affect or interact with your DNA in any way. What happens instead is that the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines work with the body's natural defenses to safely develop immunity to the disease.
At the end of the process, our bodies have learned how to protect against future infection. That immune response and making antibodies is what protects us from getting infected if the real virus enters our bodies.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Now let's look at some of the claims of various outlier groups. One such group feels that the new COVID-19 vaccine contains alien DNA for the purpose of creating alien human hybrids. Others feel that the virus was created in order to further depopulation and one world government. There are many conspiracy theories concerning this and many of the other vaccines. In fact, there's been one that purports that several vaccines have caused irreparable damage to the children who have taken them in the past.
The claim here is that a number of vaccines contain human DNA, and the FDA has acknowledged that residual human DNA has the potential to cause cancer or change your genetic code.
In fact, there was a recent Instagram post stating that the FDA had acknowledged that residual human DNA has the potential to cause cancer or to change one's genetic code. And that quote is attributed to a Kendall Nelson, producer of the film The Greater Good, which explores the pros and cons of vaccination in the United States.
The caption states, a number of vaccines contain traces of human DNA. The DNA, the foundation wrote, comes from the lung tissue of a healthy 14-week-old aborted Caucasian male fetus.
They also state that the spikes in autism in the 1980s and 90s coincided with the increased use of human DNA-contaminated MMR and varicella vaccines. Well, let's take a look at this in both the Weston A. Price Foundation and Dr. Weston Price's nutrition research. They state that the foundation is a nonprofit charity aimed at spreading information about Dr. Weston Price's nutrition research.
In accordance with the foundation, there is a belief that modern technology should be a servant to the wise and nurturing traditions of our ancestors, rather than used as a force destructive to the environment and human health, at least according to their website.
The foundation's stance on vaccination is that vaccination as practiced today is a 200-year mistake, and it further claims that childhood diseases are either mild or non-existent when parents teach children the nutrition practices for which the foundation advocates. So let's take all of that with a large grain of salt, but let's also look at conspiracy theories in general.
Many use small facts or factoids in order to prove what they want you to believe because, in the end, it benefits them in some way, usually monetarily.
Let me use an example, and I'm going to try to prove to you that 1 equals 2. Now, just humor me for a moment. Let's say that A equals B. Now, let's multiply both sides by A. And what you get is A squared equals A times B. Now, subtract B squared from both sides. I know it's a little confusing, but humor me again. You get the equation A squared minus B squared equals A times B minus B squared. Now we go on and look at each side of the equation. And what we do is mathematically, what's called factoring it out. That makes the equation look like A plus B times A minus B equals B times A minus B. Again, it's still getting more confusing, but now we divide both sides by AB. That makes the equation A plus B equals B. So remember at the beginning we said that A equals B? So the equation becomes B plus B equals B, or 2B equals B. And since we already said that B is 1, we've basically, quote, proven, unquote, 1 equals 2. Now, if you don't believe me, just look up the proof that 1 equals 2. There's even a proof that 1 equals 0.
The real answer here is that it is impossible. However, it is difficult to see where the error lies in the proof. That is often what happens in conspiracy theories, especially those where someone benefits from the false information.
Have you ever heard the saying, repeat a lie often enough and it becomes the truth? This quote is often falsely attributed to two sources, Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Goebbels, the henchmen for Adolf Hitler.
However, it was said similarly in a book called The Crown of a Lie, written by Isa Blyden in 1869, way before either Lenin or Goebbels lived.
So the point here is just be careful. Both hearing and seeing may not be sufficient for believing. Just ask any magician. But getting back to the question of whether vaccines were contaminated with DNA, it's important to understand that some vaccines do contain human DNA. But I must tell you again, not the COVID vaccines that are presently out.
Vaccines for chickenpox, rubella, and hepatitis A are created using human embryo cells, specifically fibroblast cells, which are needed to hold skin and connective tissue together.
The fetal cell lines, now called MRC5 cells, continue to grow in a lab and are still used to make other vaccines today.
An FDA spokesperson confirmed that even though these concerns have been raised theoretically, there is no scientific evidence that residual human DNA or vaccines that use it cause cancer or can change a person's genetic code.
A new blood test can just about find every virus you ever caught in a single drop of blood. It's not just an interesting historical record, but doctors hope the test might be used to find out whether viruses might cause a range of chronic diseases, such as diabetes or heart disease, and to see whether infections early in life can affect your immunity later. Now, Carmen's been talking my ear off about viruses and viral testing, and she's done a lot of reading on a test called VirScan, V-I-R-S-C-A-N.
I first read about VirScan in 2014. It was described as a method where you can take a tiny drop of blood and determine what viruses a person has been infected with over the course of many years.
Before VirScan, a physician needed to basically guess what virus might be at play and individually test for that particular virus. However, with VirScan, we can look for virtually all viruses, even rare ones, with a single test. The way the test does this is by looking for the body's immune response to viruses. It finds antibodies that keep the viruses from coming back, which can stay circulating in the blood for years.
There are thousands of viruses, from rhinoviruses and adenoviruses, that cause the common cold to the human immunodeficiency virus that causes AIDS.
At that time, when VirScan was first proposed, there were a total of 206 different species of viruses known to infect people. So to do this, researchers developed the test using something called bacteriophages, which are actually viruses that attack bacteria, not humans.
What they did was to engineer bacteriophages to make a little piece of protein from more than 1,000 known viruses.
The test goes into a drop of blood, which is enough to carry all the antibodies trained to recognize a virus that's infected someone or those activated by a vaccine. On average, people had antibodies against 10 species of virus. And listen to this. Some people had as many as 84 different species of virus.
Recently, in a paper published in Science, investigators from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School disclosed some details of the antibody response to SARS-CoV-2 and how this response may differ in individuals who go on to have a more severe case of COVID-19.
more and more is understood about how viruses and vaccines work. The next question is, what do those antibodies do? The researchers need to identify which antibodies have an inhibitory capacity or which, if any, may actually promote the virus and help it enter into immune cells.
In their analysis, Elitch and colleagues look in depth at antibody response to SARS-CoV-2 by using VIRSCAN to analyze blood samples from 232 COVID-19 patients and 190 pre-COVID-19 era control.
The team identified 800 sites of the virus that the immune system can recognize. These sites are called epitopes. Interestingly, not all epitopes are created equal. Some may be recognized by neutralizing antibodies, which can elicit a response that eliminates the infection.
In some cases, including the related coronavirus that causes SARS, viruses may even be able to benefit from the body's antibody response using antibodies to enter cells in a phenomenon.
This is known as antibody-dependent enhancement. Now, in the case of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, the team detected a range of antibody frequencies against various epitopes.
One epitope was recognized by 79% of COVID-19 patients. 10 epitopes were in regions essential for viral entry and are likely recognized by neutralizing antibodies.
Now the team used the most discriminatory epitopes to develop a rapid diagnostic test. If the immune system's response to epitopes isn't found to be protective or even give the virus an advantage, vaccines will need to target other regions of the virus to give the immune system a boost.
In addition, the team found that there are several epitopes conserved across coronaviruses, and that the immune system is likely to try to reuse antibodies against them when infected with SARS-CoV-2.
The researchers compared the viral histories of hospitalized and non-hospitalized COVID-19 patients and found that hospitalized patients were much more likely to have CMV and HSV-1, two common herpes viruses. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, better known as the FDA, granted emergency use authorization for a multivirus test on July 2nd, 2020.
On November 20th, 2020, the FDA granted an amendment that will enable more laboratories to use the test with automated high-throughput specimen preparation instruments, potentially increasing the speed and throughput of testing.
There is now new evidence that COVID-19 invades the brain and directly acts on brain cells, causing neuroinflammation. What the investigators did was inject the spike 1 into mice and found that it crossed the blood-brain barrier. Once it passed it and into the brain, it was taken up not only by brain regions and the brain space, but also other organisms. We're talking about the lungs, spleen, liver, and kidneys.
Remember that the spike is a protein. The virus uses it to grab onto their cell and then crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Initially, the proteins such as that S1 spike protein become detached from the virus itself, break off. Then these proteins enter the brain, causing the brain to release the cytokines. These, in turn, cause inflammation, and this causes neurotoxicity.
We already know some of these symptoms, which include the loss of taste and smell, headaches, confusion, stroke, and cerebral hemorrhage.
This also means that the respiratory symptoms of COVID-19 may actually be the result partly from the invasion of the areas of the brain responsible for respiratory functions, not just the virus's action at the site of the lungs. One show that we have been postponing to present in order to obtain the most accurate information is the one that Carmen has most wanted to present to you, our listeners, and that is a full show on the present actual treatments that are available for those with COVID-19. So remember to come back next Saturday at 5:30 p.m. on AM 600 or FM 101.1 WBOB Radio. Now, you can also hear us live at the same time on the internet at www.wbob.com and click on the Listen Live button at the top of the screen.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.